You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 117 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I'm Nathan Duncan. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Duncan, and I am joined today once again by a new dad for the third time, Nate Miller. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
I'm glad to be back. It's been like a month since we've talked, man. And yes, I have a two-week-old son at home, and combine that with my 3 and 5-year-old sons, I'm definitely pumped to be talking baseball with some grown-ups.
And not dealing with what we talked about before we started recording with the
excrement flying and the urine. It's sterile. I mean, you know.
I was trying to figure out a delicate way to put it, but... Perhaps you did a much better job than I would have done. But speaking of excrement, we have with us also Van Lee returning back to the show. Hey, welcome back, Van.
That's right. Thank you for that delightful introduction. I'm proud to once again be associated with excrement. That's been following my whole career. And you know what? We go hand in hand together. Also, I feel like you were just talking with adults with baseball, like talking with children and toddlers about baseball. That would almost be like talking to that old Phillies regime with Ruben Amaro. That's kind of what they do.
You'll get no Phillies love from me, man.
I assume Buck Showalter is the same way. But he haunts my dreams, so I'm biased.
Oh, man. I feel like we're like already off the tracks and we never got on them to begin with.
that's par for the course. Well, this, you know, we managed to, this was supposed to be the trifecta of the Nasty Cast moving forward back when we switched to Big Eye Fantasy Sports. And we managed to get through the entire month of April without the three of us being able to record at the same time in the same week. So this, it feels good. Together at last.
That's right. The band is back together.
April's just hard to predict, to be honest with you. And I say that with a wife named April, so it's kind of like a double entendre there. Oh boy. You know, she's beyond tired of the joke of the last 9 months where I was like, yeah, April's due in April, you know.
So what you should have done then is start naming your children like January, February, March, and you have to keep going until you get to March.
You know what's funny? Before we found out we were having a third son, I actually told her, I'm like, okay, if it's a girl, we'll literally name it after you, May. So how's that?
There you go. I approve of that joke. That's a good one.
Yeah, I've got a May birthday, so I'm all for it.
Oh, well, happy birthday, early or late.
When is it?
Actually, you know what? It's next Wednesday, so we'll be recording on my birthday. I just realized that now.
Ooh, so I expect we'll have to do something special. Yeah.
He expects a digital cake. You heard that.
That's right. With a digital stripper jumping out of it.
You know, that's all we can afford at our ages is the digital cake is the only one that doesn't make you spread, because the spread is not digital, man. It's actually real.
It's very analog, of course. Yes.
Dial up.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, on today's show, we've got a whole bunch of news and injuries that is going to make everybody cry. We'll try to get through that. We're going to play some legit or quit with some early season, perhaps surprises and some duds. We're going to look into bullpens. We're going to talk about some prospects. And, of course, we're going to round out the show, as always, with some streamers. If you want to get a hold of us, please do that on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS. You can also find all the Twitter feed for all the Big Guy stuff at BGFS Network, I believe.
Correct.
And okay. And then, of course, Nate, you are at Miller_RotoDad, and Van is at Manly Van Lee, appropriately enough. By the way, Van, I noticed that since we recorded last, Pablo Sandoval has hit the DL, and I remember you using him as a chair in your office. Are those two things related?
Well, you know, I have put on a little bit of weight in my old age. Ooh. So I'm no longer a svelte 175 pounds. So, you know, sitting on Pablo, he can obviously hold a lot of weight himself, but just not that much.
I feel like he would make a good beanbag chair.
Like those really big ones, if you've heard of these, they're called love sacks. I implore everyone to look it up.
He is definitely a love sack.
I would never call another man a love sack.
I would, Pablo, but that's pretty much the bar for that.
Well, we've established a new nickname for Pablo Sandoval. He is the love sack. We're off to a rip-rolling start. Hey, if you want to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, you can get some free Dots pretzels. So why not do that? We've got a few recently. And you know what? Do it while you can, because turns out that shipping off pretzels isn't that cheap. So we're going to find a different way to represent Dots pretzels, I think, next year. So rate and review and get free Dots pretzels if you want them. Anyway, let's get on to some news, guys. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to kind of, again, we missed a week, so we're going to kind of gloss over most of the stuff that happened a week ago and do some of the more recent news, like today when Cole Hamels hit the DL. He's going to miss 8 weeks. Actually, let's sort of group. There's just a bunch of pitching injuries. Let's sort of group them all together. I think what we'll do is because we're too busy BSing before the podcast, I totally forgot to even bring this up. Let's just group all these starting pitcher injuries together, and we'll go over what we think about their value moving forward for single seasons. And then at the end of that, let's look into some replacements for them and perhaps even some deep league replacements. So we're going to start off Cole Hamels to the DL. He could miss 8 weeks. So Ben, we shall start with you. Are you looking at Cole Hamels differently in single season and redraft leagues with this injury, or
not really? For me, I think it was an oblique, if I remember. It's something to do with the side. Anyway, his velocity was down. His K percentage was abysmal. I think it was like 4.9 or something like that. Something was clearly wrong. They put him on the DL. We can see, okay, this is what was wrong. He's been healthy his entire career. This guy's a workhorse. I think he sits on the DL for, 8 weeks or however many it is. It's going to be a while. Comes back and he's fine. So, yeah, it sucks if you draft him this season, but I wouldn't try and sell him, because I don't think you're going to get any value that you could use out of it unless you're absolutely desperate for it. Just hang on to him and you'll have a fine pitcher for the rest of the season when he comes back.
What about you, Miller?
Well, once a Philly, always a Philly in my book, and I'm a Braves fan, so whatever. I mean, this guy's a total jackass. It's like he's striking out, a batter every two innings? He's hitting more batters than that, for God's sake. I mean, people say, his strikeout rate is down, but he's still preventing runs. I would say this, of course he's preventing runs. Everyone's tired of him. He's already hit four batters this season. But yeah, the hits per nine is at 6.9. So, I mean, he's not throwing the ball in the strike zone. So I think that ERA is deceiving anyway. I don't really care. And of course I draft him as my SP1 in our BGFS Dynasty League. So
my pitching isn't doing a hell of a lot better, so I don't have too much to say. But yeah, I actually, obviously it's the worst time possible to be trying to sell him on the DL. You got to wait until he comes back for the most part, if you're going to get anything for him at all. I was definitely off him coming into the year. I think for me, the writing was on the wall last year. His walks really spiked. He still had a 3.32 ERA, but his FIP and XFIP was closer to 4. So I just wasn't interested in him at all at his price going into the season. And now you look at what he's done so far. Like you said, Nate, 4.13 K per 9 right now, just not getting any whiffs at all. I'm completely out on him, as I was before the season. In single season, you're not going to get much for him, so you just got to kind of stay the course. But in dynasty leagues, I think I would be looking to pretty much squeeze whatever value I possibly could out of him.
Yeah, I mean, my faith was in the 200 strikeouts he still posted last season. I mean, you saw the walks, but the strikeouts were still there. Now they're gone, so there's not much to see here. I would not be deceived by a 3.03 ERA right now.
I will take the opposite of you guys. Well, I've always said about Cole Hamels, which, by the way, I do this really stupid thing in my head where I extrapolate the first letter of their first and last names, and it's stupid to me, but I do it. And he's my favorite, Whole Camels. Yep. Anyway, my favorite thing about Whole Camels is that as his age progresses, he's a changeup pitcher. So I always thought he would have a pretty good arc to his career. We're getting into that twilight, so he's not the ace anymore, but I'm perfectly fine with him as a number three, even a definitely a number four. And I think if you have him in Dynasty, I'd hang on to it. I think there's going to be more people with your guys' opinion than with mine. So therefore, I'm going to hold on to him and just take the decent value out of him. Again, you're not getting ace status here, but I do like Cole Hamels for the rest of his career.
All right, so we'll move on then. Corey Kluber also hit the DL with a back strain. It's kind of bothered him off and on so far this season. So, Nate, we'll start with you this time. Are you worried about Kluber at all? He's been pretty poor out of the gates.
His back strain bothered me too. So, I mean, these guys I've invested in, it's like, okay, well, a couple of your teams are doing well, let's get hurt. I mean, the strikeout rate is still there with Kluber, so the stuff is still there. But, I mean, coming into the season, anyone who was down on him at least a little bit, saying, be careful drafting this guy's an SP1, You look back at that workload from the postseason last year, the Indians rode him to death. Now, hopefully we see it corrected. Maybe with some time on the DL, he can get some rest and get that back corrected. I like him. If you could buy him for, I don't know, 60, 70 cents on the dollar, as they say right now, I would.
Okay, Van, I believe I saw something on Twitter about you actually buying him.
I did, yeah. Actually, I was super thrilled with that. So we can kind of discuss that trade now. I have been a huge Corey Kluber fan for a while. I think he's always been pretty underrated. And if you remember correctly, he kind of did this last year where out of the gate, he really stumbled for the first four or five starts and then picked it up and was elite for the rest of the season. This year, we can see that the back was clearly bothering him. Skip a start, skip two starts, get back to healthy, and I think he's going to be really good. I actually traded my Eric Thames for him in a dynasty league, and I am more than thrilled with that. I was kind of hoping the guy was a little wary, and this was before he went on the DL, but he was pulled from the start. So I was hoping the guy who had him was a little bit wary because I think Thames is going to be good, and I'm sure we'll discuss him later, but I think Kluber is an elite number one pitcher. I think we talked about trading Dallas Keuchel for him a couple weeks ago, something along those lines, if you could. And I would still do that in a heartbeat. I'm all in on Corey Kluber.
I like that Thames trade.
Yeah, and in that league, just to set it up for you, I'm number one. It's a 15-team league in offensive statistics, and I'm number 14 in pitching statistics. So I just made a trade of Trevor Story for Steven Strasburg, and there was another piece involved. And then I'd made this trade for Kluber. So that was really smart in my move to do that as far as pitching. So don't be afraid to do that if you've got an excess in one regard to fill a hole in the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do like that trade for Kluber. I think this is pretty much peak Thames value right now. Although I do think he is, well, we'll get to him actually in some legit or quit later on. So maybe I won't show my hand. But yeah, I agree. I'm buying Kluber if I can. I think he'll be just fine once he gets back off the DL. Yeah, like you said, he's a slow starter, and his velocity tends to ramp up a little bit, maybe a little bit slower than some, and he doesn't really live on velocity anyway, I guess. But his swing strike rate is fine. Not getting quite as many chases as he has in the past, but nothing to be concerned about as far as I'm concerned. So this one cut me deep, guys. Noah Syndergaard, he is going to miss at least 3 months of the season with a partial lat tear. So I guess how... Then we'll start with you here. How are you treating Thor in single season formats?
Single season formats, I have no interest. At this point, I think with all the injuries the Mets have had, they're going to be out of it. And I think they're going to realize they're out of it maybe 1 or 2 months in. So I think they're going to baby Syndergaard, bringing him back, and just take it really easy. So maybe you get some decent value out of him at the end of the year when they kind of ramp him up just to get him a little bit of work. But I don't know. I'm not confident in that. In a dynasty format or long-term format, I'm buying everywhere I can. If you can get a team that owns him that's near the top of the standings and wants to compete this year, try and trade some pieces for him because I think career-wise he's going to be perfectly fine.
Yes, and in fact, in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, I might be trying to do the same thing myself.
Me too, so stop it.
We will be competing for him. We'll see how that turns out. But Nate, what about you?
Well, you got to love elite pitchers that double as doctors, right? I'm going to skip an MRI. I'm great, and I'm going to go blow my arm out and piss off everyone. So, yeah, I mean, I'm done. Just from that standpoint, I may never draft him again.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Personal grudges don't win fantasy championships. I'm sure I will, but it's going to be 2019-ish before I do.
Yeah, it makes you feel better, though, when you don't draft those guys you just don't like.
Hey, guess what? Guess what, guys? Guess what? Guess who just now owns Noah Syndergaard in the prestigious Dynasty
No, oh, no.
It's funny you mentioned that, so I pulled it up, and I realized that the offer I had sent was rejected. He sent me another one, so I just took it.
I just got the notice.
Multitasker.
I probably paid too much, but I'm perfectly fine with doing this. I just gave up Garrett Cole, Andrew Miller, and Jose Bautista for Thor. I'm not competing for the next 2, maybe 3 years, so I'm more than happy with this. I like Cole a lot. Miller, I could care less about. Bautista, I think, will have some value, but not as much as he had in the past.
In a dynasty league, I have a different take, of course.
Sure. Well, this is great because now I have another ace, and hopefully he doesn't die like my last one.
Yeah. Oh, God. That sucks so hard. Okay. Yeah, I'm not even the world's biggest Garrett Cole fan.
Well, not for me so much as him, but sure. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I like I said, I love that trade for you. I'm not the world's biggest Garrett Cole fan. So getting Thor, especially as a rebuilding team, that's a foundational piece for you moving forward. That is crazy timing, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you brought it up, or maybe whoever brought it up, I'm happy.
Yeah, no, you should be. All right, our last bit of pitching news. Tyler Skaggs out 10 to 12 weeks due to an oblique strain as Van weeps because he is, of course, a member of his beloved Angels.
Mm-hmm. It's sad news.
I mean, probably just no interest at all in him, right, guys, in single season?
No, I don't. And honestly, I don't really have a whole lot of interest in him in dynasty leagues because he can't stay healthy. He's the Angels version of Steven Matz with not quite as much talent. I think Skaggs could have been pretty good, but at this point, it's a don't really waste your time on it. You're just going to be frustrated.
Yeah, I loved him 5 years ago. And the injuries just stack up. You feel bad for guys like this, but I don't have any interest fantasy-wise.
Yeah. Okay. So with all that, let's find some replacement starting pitchers. That's kind of a weird thing to say, but we got our buddy Boots on Twitter. He wants to know, he's in a deep league. We got to find some deep league replacements for these guys. So we're looking at probably around 10% owned or thereabouts. So let's see. I think we're on Nate. You want to start us off? You have any deep league recommendations for pickups to fill in for some of these guys?
Well, I write down a few. Trevor Cahill's 9% owned on Yahoo. I mean, if you watched his start on Tuesday against the Rockies, especially in San Diego is not quite the pitcher's park it once was. You know, some fence adjustments, things like that, but it still favors pitchers. Cahill has reinvented himself. I mean, that strikeout rate is something I didn't ever think we'd see for him unless he was pitching in a bullpen role, a starter's role. He's looked quite good. So Trevor Cahill, long-term, some upside on a guy, though. I've liked Jordan Montgomery of the Yankees since they called him up a couple of weeks back. The whip is a bit high. If you're in a deep league, sometimes you got to take those ratio bumps. You know, maybe it'll hurt you there, but the strikeout rate is real with him. I got to watch him pitch in his debut against the Rays, MLB.TV. Got to love it. But with him, he's got some nasty stuff, and he can rack up the strikeouts. Jordan Montgomery, maybe an innings cap there this season, most definitely. But those are two I like, Montgomery and Cahill.
Very nice. Yes, Montgomery was on my list as well. What about you, Van?
I've got a couple of names here, and for whatever reason, I didn't write the owned percentage down, but I know it's low. JC Ramirez of the Angels. He's come out of the bullpen to start, and he's been really good. He's thrown 17 and third innings. He's got a 19-5 K to walk ratio. FIP points out that his ERA is probably a little high because his FIP's at 2.4, WHIP's at 0.98. As a starter, he's just succeeded. Usually it's the opposite of this. You'll see guys who struggle as a starter who are really good in the bullpen. With him, it's the opposite. He's not a velocity guy. So instead, using four pitches instead of just one pitch or two pitches in the bullpen, as a starter, he's doing really well. I think the biggest concern with him is going to be innings. I think he's going to tire pretty quickly because he's never really been a starter in his career. So eventually, you're going to have to look at replacements for him. But ride the wave while it's here. And then I wanted to point out across the pond in Oakland, Jesse Hahn. He's thrown 26 innings. He's got 20 strikeouts, an ERA right at 3, a FIP right at 3, and a WHIP under 1. He's got a really good curve, and the sinker's being thrown pretty hard this year. So I like him a lot. He's finally coming back and maybe doing a little bit of what he did with the Padres a few years ago.
Yeah, I've grabbed Hahn in a couple places, so I really like that call. J.C. Ramirez, when they brought that guy up, am I the only one that had to do like a triple take to make sure it wasn't J.C. Romero?
Or Jose Ramirez, because there's eight players named Jose Ramirez now.
Yeah, one of them pitching in the Braves bullpen.
Yeah, there's only one Jose Ramirez in my eyes. And he plays my boy. Yeah, no, I had J.C. Ramirez down as well. Those strikeouts are very intriguing. And then my other two guys that I have here, Daniel Norris, like that dude just refuses to break out, but it's coming at some point. It will happen. He's very, very low owned. He needs to limit the walks, but I still really like the potential with him. And then Charlie Morton, who's actually pitching right now, is another guy that I like. Just about 10 strikeouts per nine right now.
He's throwing like 99 now. It's absurd how hard Charlie Morton is throwing.
Yeah, his velocity spiked way up, and right now, well, and this is mid-game. He's five innings in right now. He's pitching very well, but his FIP is 3.07 right now, while his ERA is 4.09. So he's been pretty unlucky so far with just BABIP and everything, so I definitely think that he should be higher owned. And if he throws another inning or two and just allows the one run, he's going to be picked up anyway, so you might be a day too late. But those are the two guys that I had.
Well, you know, it's totally normal for a 33-year-old pitcher to say, you know what, I'm going to increase my velocity now. About as normal as Barry Bonds' head size growing when he was in his
Oh, wait a minute. Are we insinuating something here?
No, no. Charlie Morton is clearly not on PEDs. I'm trying to figure, I think he might be on Red Bull or something. But yeah, I don't know. But I'll ride the wave. I'm agreeing.
You know, a few years ago, Morton kind of changed his delivery, and I started calling him Roy Halladay Light because he looks exactly like Roy Halladay now. He, of course, didn't pitch like Roy Halladay for a while, but he is now, apparently.
Yeah. Another guy who was a Braves farmhand who decides to be good much later.
Yeah. Well, Twins, David Ortiz, you know, don't even start that conversation.
the ultimate.
Yeah. Moving right along to Texas, where Delino DeShields has apparently claimed the starting left field job in Texas, according to coach or manager Jeff Banister. It's a bit of a dubious honor just because basically he was the third in line and Jurickson Profar and Ryan Rua refused to hit the baseball. So what sort of leagues are we targeting DeShields in, Nate?
Most standard mixed. I mean, I'm that big on him. I've been on this guy for 3 years and I was really kind of disappointed. He helped me win some leagues in 2015, of course, but last season, disappointment, you know, that sophomore slump, but his was even more than a sophomore slump. That doesn't really even do it justice. He just kind of falls off the face of the earth. But yeah, especially if the Rangers are going to lead him in that leadoff role, I love him. And I think we're about to talk about an injury to Adam Eaton here later. And we'll talk about DeShields again, but right now coming into Wednesday night, the guy had hit leadoff for the Rangers in each of the past six games, .462 on base percentage in those games. Yeah, I mean, we know the speed is there. I'm old enough to remember his dad playing. I loved him. I love the junior.
All right, Van, 10-team league. Are you grabbing DeShields?
I don't know about that in a 10-team league. I guess it would be depend on team construction. Look, let's talk about the good things DeShields does. He can walk. And his average isn't going to kill you, and he can steal a little bit. He's not an elite base stealer, and in fact, his percentage is right around 75%, which for me is the level. Like, if you're at that, you're fine. If you dip below that, you need to stop running so much because you're getting caught way too much. So, I mean, there's some value to be had here, but I'm kind of bullish on it. I don't know. We'll see how he can do. Like I said, he can hit for an okay average. He gets on base and he steals a little bit. But the only way the guy ever makes it to second base is if he steals a base because he has less than zero power. Like he cannot, like doubles are non-existent for the guy. He can't even hit the ball that hard.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. 10 teams is too shallow. I think in a 12-team league, if I'm just devastated with injuries, then I'll probably give him a look. I think I would rather just watch him from afar and see if he continues to hit, especially if it's a standard 5x5. If you're in an OBP league, that's a completely different story. Much more interested in DeShields in an OBP league. So, yeah, I think he can definitely be a rabbit for you. And speaking of which, I mean, we might as well move along to that right now. We've got Adam Eaton, who... RIP Adam Eaton for this year. He's going to miss 6 to 9 months. He tore his ACL and basically needs a new leg. So let's look for some outfield replacements for him then. So Van, do you have any recommendations along with perhaps Delino DeShields?
I do. Delino DeShields is my deep league guy along with Rajai Davis, kind of similar players in that regard, though Davis at least has some stupid home run power for some reason. But both of those guys are in deeper leagues, guys that can kind of go on your roster and at least give you some statistics in some regard. They're going to get at bats. They're going to play. So it's not like you're getting, you know, a Jerod Dyson who should only get 250 at bats a season. On the more shallow leagues, I kind of mentioned his name a couple weeks ago, and that's Jason Hayward. He's still hitting pretty well. He finally hit a home run at least. Kevin Pillar is actually hitting pretty well atop the Blue Jays lineup. I like him a lot, and he's still unowned in quite a few leagues. And then, of course, your Braves fan over here would enjoy this. That's Ender Inciarte, who's shown some power for some reason, although he's not getting on base. But I still like his long-term outlook. He's defensively, he's amazing, so he's going to play regardless. And then the offensive value is there. He can hit for an okay average. He can get on base eventually. And then he can also steal a little bit. And again, this year has some power for some reason.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, Nate, do you have any other names?
Yeah, I would say, you know, Ender Inciarte, along with many other left-handed hitters, taking advantage of the new, not Turner Field anymore, the new SunTrust Park, is definitely playing four more home run power than Turner Field, and especially for a left-handed hitters hitting the ball into the right field seats. They get in those right field seats quick. So, yeah, Ender Inciarte, not a ton of power, but you don't need a ton of power to hit it out of that new stadium. I'm going to stay right with the Braves. Nick Markakis is owned in only 14% of Yahoo leagues. This is a guy that's just kind of bland. You know, you love him as a – you know, if you're a fan of the team he's on, because he's just a solid actual baseball player. But in fantasy baseball, especially here in this portion of his career, it's a little, as I said, bland, I think is the correct term, but the guy can just flat out hit. If you want an uptick in ratios, and you're talking about like an Adam Eaton, he's not going to score the runs that an Adam Eaton had potential for in the Nationals lineup, but a batting average, if you're in an on-base league, I love playing in on-base leagues. Nick Markakis can help you there. Coming into Wednesday night, you know, the Braves offense have been on fire, winning five of their last seven games and averaging somewhere in the 7 to 8 run range, you know, five runs in each game except for one. And Nick Markakis in that, a 919 OPS in that stretch. Yeah, I mean, as long as Freddie Freeman, Matt Kemp are hitting ahead of him, Nick Markakis is going to produce. And I think he's a solid bat that plenty of people are overlooking.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, in on base leagues, I will recommend Shin-Soo Choo, as I have nearly every week since the inception of this podcast. But Rajah Davis was on my list too, especially if you need steals. And another guy I'm going to recommend, I think that we're going to kind of roll this into a different news item as well, Aaron Hicks, who could potentially be seeing more playing time. It depends on Jacoby Ellsbury. He might be hitting the DL. He's dealing with a bruised nerve in his elbow. So that's a situation to monitor. If he does hit the DL, especially, I think Aaron Hicks makes for a nice short-term pickup. He's just walking a ton. He's got almost a 20% walk rate as we record this right now. And just being super disciplined. I actually just wrote him up last night on Fantastics, and he has a 15% chase rate, which would lead all of baseball right now if he had enough plate appearances to qualify. So he is being extremely selective at the plate. And as we know that, you know, the more walks you have, the better pitches that you actually swing at and hit tends to lead to a bit more power. And he's got a little bit of the power speed combination. So especially as a short term ad, I would like him a lot. But let's stick in New York for a little bit, where Greg Bird is on the DL. So who are we looking at as the playing time winner there in New York, Nate?
Well, I have a theory. You know, I saw this in your show notes, and I had a theory. It just hit me. I was like, here's something Joe Girardi maybe can try. Because Aaron Judge can do everything else, maybe they should just allow him to man the entire outfield and give him triple the at-bats per game, you know, because he gets to bat as the left, center, and right fielder. And then the guy can go ahead and hit 90 home runs. So that's my theory. Aaron Hicks, on the serious note. Yes, of course. But, yeah, I like my Judge plan.
I agree. I'll allow it. Watch yourself. Van, do you have anything to add to the situation there in New York?
Well, you know, a Judge playing all three outfield positions, all he has to do is fall over, and he can catch a ball at any part of the park because he's, what, 7'9" or something like that? Yep. Guy's a monster. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Aaron Hicks is going to get a lot of playing time. There was talk that Mason Williams might get called up to play a little center. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think he can hit. Defensively, he'll be fine. And I don't know. Everybody's hitting in the Yankees lineup, so he doesn't have to hit. But if I'm the Yankees, I'd just stick with Hicks. Hicks has been unbelievable. He's hitting for power. He's walking. Like, all the stuff you said, his triple slash so far is 300, 419, 640. He's doing what the Twins thought he was going to do before they ruined him.
Before they traded him away for a backup catcher.
Exactly.
I've been a AAA ever since.
I would offer something to pay attention to that could be a route for the Yankees. You know, on a more serious note, is Chase Headley's not completely inexperienced in the outfield. We could see him make a move to one of the corner outfield spots, and then Ronald Torres, who got off to a great start with the bat, who kind of lost his playing time a little bit with the D.D. Gregorius coming back from off the DL. We could see Torres at third base and Headley in the outfield. That's something that could be a possibility as well.
That's true. Headley's played a little bit of left field in his career. What I did want to point out about Greg Bird, who hit the DL, is that they're calling it a bone bruise on his foot. Now, if you remember 2 years ago when Greg Bird came into the league, Mark Teixeira had a, quote, bone bruise on his foot, which turned out to be a hairline fracture of some regard. So he was out for the rest of the season. So there's possibility that happens. I'm not all that enamored with Greg Bird. I never really have been. And I know there are a lot of Yankees faithful who are totally into him, but this is just another reason for me to kind of stay away from him.
Yeah, I was definitely big on Bird in the preseason. I was, you know, shrieking caw into the microphone, so on and so forth. I think, especially if you're in an OBP dynasty or keeper league, I would actually be targeting him right now because his value is hopefully never going to be as low as it was before. But I mean, it's as low as it ever will be, I guess I should say. He was walking a lot. He was obviously striking out a lot, 30% of the time. But he was still making a lot of hard contact. I think he was getting a little bit unlucky in terms of BABIP. He had a 42% hard contact rate and just a 135 BABIP. My God, I mean, talk about a lot of bad luck. And obviously hitting a lot of fly balls, you know, that tends to lower your BABIP pretty quickly, especially when you're going opposite field as much as he was. He's supposed to be pulling the ball. He was going opposite field. I don't know why. I don't think he'll ever be a guy who hits for much average, but I'm not totally out on Bird yet. Hopefully it's not a hairline fracture and he manages to come back hopefully in a couple weeks. But I think if you're looking for a direct replacement for Greg Bird, perhaps you can just look right at his immediate fill-in in Chris Carter, who, you know, that turned into a pretty weird signing once Greg Bird started hitting the ball all over the place. So now I think that you could see more at bats from Chris Carter. And if you don't care about your batting average, go ahead and plug him in there for some free home runs. Let's see. What else should we talk about here? I suppose we've got Beef Castillo to the DL. And Caleb Joseph is going to step in for him. Oh, is what do you think, Van? Is he worth anything? Or are you looking at any other catchers, perhaps?
I'm not messing with Caleb Joseph. I just have no interest in him. There are a couple other guys that, if you're in a league where Caleb Joseph is out there, and which he probably should be, there are some other guys to look at. Giovanni Soto has been hurt a little bit, but he's hitting for power this year. He's slugging 500. Robinson Chirinos has four homers. He's hitting 320, 433, 840 on the year. These are guys that if they're out there, I'll take him 10 times out of 10 over Caleb Joseph. Joseph had some power a few years ago, but this year he's, what, I think he's hitting like 220, 280 or something like that on the OBP 280. So I have no interest in Caleb Joseph at all.
All right. Nate, anybody else perhaps is a pickup? I was trying to think of how to frame the question because I was thinking two catcher leagues with Caleb Joseph, but then Wellington Castillo, I think, got drafted in a lot of single catcher formats too. Yeah. So I think a lot of people are scrambling right now.
I would say this. I am actually in one league. It's a deep AL only roto league. You know, our BGFS colleague David Kerr runs it. BGFS sponsors it. I'm taking part in the AL only, and it's a two catcher. And I actually drafted Caleb Joseph with Wellington Castillo. So right now it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where that league gets so deep. Joseph was one of my last few picks. And I mean, I've actually been able to pick up his one home run on my roto docket for that league. I would point out, I mean, Van mentions that some past years he had some power, you know, over 566 bats across 2014 and 15. He did hit 20 homers with 25 doubles. There is some pop there. He's hitting in a very homer happy park in Camden Yards. I mean, if you're in a deep style league like I am with the two catchers and 15 teams in an AL only, I mean, those are rare leagues, but yeah, I am an owner of him there. Outside of that depth, no, you could probably find better. I would direct people, if you haven't seen my Atlanta Braves catcher Tyler Flowers hitting over 400 as of Wednesday night, and he's not on in your league, fix that.
Absolutely, yeah. If you weren't going to mention him, I was going to bring him up again because we were talking about him before the show. So, yeah, there's – especially if you're in a single-catcher league. If you're in a two-catcher league, you're probably screwed just because the position is so horrible. But yeah, just looking at some of the low-owned catchers on Yahoo, I mean, Francisco Cervelli, Jet Bandy.
Jet Bandy. I love Jet Bandy.
Oh, the all-name team.
Yeah. Real quick story. A good friend of mine and my co-host of my podcast, Brian Vaughn, and I were playing MLB The Show, and this was last year, and I mentioned something about Jet Bandy hitting a home run, and he goes, yeah, Jet. And there was this brief moment where I didn't know if he didn't realize his name is actually Jet or if he was just being facetious. So I kind of eventually probed on it. He did not know his name was Jet, and I, to this day, will not let him live that down because his name really is Jet Bandy.
What did he think it was? Like Jep?
Jeff. Like, what would you name your kid if you're going to go J-E and then two consonants that are the same? You're going to go Jeff. But no, his parents said, oh, man, we're going Jet.
I'd probably go with Jello myself. But.
Jello Bandy.
I actually asked my wife to name our first son Jet, and she didn't go for it. So
so
we named him Maddox, you know, and I'm a lifelong Braves fan. And I was all more about that anyway. So I won't talk about odd names with sons named Maddox, Macklin, and Mercer. So
Jordy Mercer, of course, is who you name that one after, right?
Not a chance. if you could pick it at shortstop like that, no. It might be
Warhammer.
Warhammer. Thank you. People, it's coming back. It's going to happen.
For some reason, that's one that stuck with me. I don't know why.
The Warhammer, yeah. I'm going to pay someone at Baseball Reference to change his nickname to that on the website. I have to.
All right. Well, Nate, you screwed up by, you know, not naming your kid Jello, but we're going to look over that. We're gonna discuss this over the break, but we worked really hard, guys. Let's take five, and then we'll come back with some legit or quit.
Do you want every word of baseball analysis from Big Guy Fantasy Sports sent directly to your inbox each and every day? In that case, head on over to BigGuyFantasySports.com, find the box that says BGFS Daily Fantasy Blast, type in your name and email address, then click subscribe. It's that simple. Don't fall behind your competition on waiver wire trends, prospect scouting reports, streaming options, or even DFS picks to click. Subscribe to the BigGuyFantasySports.com newsletter today.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, we have returned. We spent the break telling our deepest, darkest secrets, but we're gonna talk about some baseball now. We're gonna do some legit or quit. We've got a lot of guys to talk about here, and we got a request from our buddy Jason out on Twitter to revisit the likes of Aaron Judge and Eric Thames, who are undoubtedly the hottest hitters throughout the month of April. So let's start off with Aaron Judge, because he hit yet another dong tonight, number 13 on the year. Van, I guess we can start with you here. What do you think, legit or quit? Aaron Judge, where are you at with him?
I mean, look at it this way. 2 weeks ago, I said he was absolutely legit. This week, I say he's absolutely legit. The guy's really good. This doesn't continue. I mean, 1 month is 1 month, but he's still an elite-level player. So I think maybe the average comes down. The on-base percentage, it might stay in that similar range. It's a 345. But depending on how far the average comes down, that could still be solid. And then the slugging's what it is, because the guy hits for a lot of power. And like we talked about earlier, he can play all three outfield positions at the exact same time. So that's kind of a benefit there as well. But I do want to ask you guys, what do you think his favorite dystopian future movie is?
Judge Dredd.
No, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, of course. Do you know what his favorite every man blue collar working job movie is? Office Space. You know, because of Mike Judge.
Yep.
Ah, zing.
Damn it, Bobby.
That's what I got. Damn it, Bobby. The boy. Right. So yes, I like Aaron Judge.
You know, it's even, I mean, the selling point for me for Aaron Judge, obviously playing all three outfield spots and hitting three times in the order. But it's the utility belt that he wears, because of that, they allowed him to also wear a utility belt, and he just fills it with gavels that have gloves attached to it. So he flings them about the outfield to catch the balls, because he can't run side to side.
He's actually Donkey Kong. Let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like that. Yeah.
Nailed it.
They also give him barrels.
And a banana
while he barrels up pitches.
Ooh.
Oh, apparently Marcus Stroman was Mario tonight. So,
well, yeah. Does this make his little buddy Ronald Torres Diddy Kong? Is that how it works?
Sure, I'm good with that.
Works for me.
I keep going with this analogy if you want.
We could do a whole show on Aaron Judge. Does he make the MLB all name team? I don't know.
Well, it might.
It's not unique. It's just fun. There's so many ways to play with it.
Yeah.
So, Nate, what about you? Do you have any other differing thoughts on Judge?
No.
Okay.
I picked him for AL Rookie of the Year at the beginning of the season. Everybody's like, well, yeah, maybe he'll lead the AL in strikeouts somewhat. I think an 828 slugging percentage is good. I'd have to go back and look it up on Fangraphs or something, but I think that's good.
I think that's good. Yeah, I think you're right. All right, so if we're going to sell high on him, if you have somebody who's an unbeliever out there and they just want to cash in on this guy, let's play a little dude feud here and go down the line. I'm just going to go with preseason rankings here in the outfield and see where you guys are standing. Obviously, we're going to leave Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Chris Bryant, Bryce Harper out of the conversation here. Those guys are pretty close to untouchable, but if it's me, I'm thinking of him. I'm starting to think of him as a bit of a Giancarlo Stanton. And he, for many years, has gone in like the second, third round. So I'll ask you guys a little bit of a different skill set, but Charlie Blackmon or Aaron Judge rest of the season?
Blackmon for me.
Blackmon, yeah.
Okay.
He's got a more sustainable ability, I guess is what I say. If Judge struggles, you're going to be hurt in a lot of regards. He's still going to hit home runs no matter what. If Blackmon struggles, he's still got to run. He's still going to get on base. He's still going to hit for an okay average. So I'd much rather have Blackmon there.
Starling Marte.
Well, at this point, I mean, Judge. Just because you're going to get a full season anyway.
Yeah, actually, I had Dynasty in my mind when I said that, but that's getting a little...
I'd go Judge. If you're talking Dynasty beyond this year, I'm going Judge.
Ooh, doggy. Okay. What do you think, Ben?
That's a trickier one. I think Marte's overall game is still going to be really good. I think he's 28, maybe 29, so he's still young, but Judge is 24, so... That's a five-year difference. That's the 4 or 5 year. That's the big deal for me there. That's a long time. So roster construction is going to play a role in that. But I think right now I'm going to lean Marte, but I would be okay if you take Judge in that regard.
It's a dangerous game. You know, looking at a month of crazy stats for Aaron Judge in a dynasty league for the likes of some of these guys like Starling Marte, I think I would buy Marte for Judge if I could right now in a dynasty league. And of course, it depends, like you said, on roster construction and perhaps a little bit of a difference in if it's an OBP league versus standard batting average league. I think Judge is going to have a much better OBP than batting average, you know, pretty much moving forward. So if it's an OBP league, I'd be more inclined to hang on to Judge, but I do like Marte a lot. So how about George Springer we'll go back to single season leagues now.
I'm a Springer guy through and through. So I'm still sticking with Springer on this one.
I am as well, but it's very close. I'm invested in both. Obviously I just spent a much higher draft pick on Springer. It's close, but I'm going to have to say Springer can give you the stolen base bump, and I don't think that's ever going to be a part of Judge's game.
And I think Springer's proved that the guy can hit for average. Like, I no longer think of George Springer as a guy who's going to hit 230, 240. He's a 260, 270 hitter to me. And let's be honest, if we come in 1 year and George Springer hits 50 home runs or Judge hits 50 home runs, we're not going to be surprised at either one. Springer has that much power. He doesn't have the raw power that Judge has, but he has the game power. So if that were to happen, it wouldn't surprise me that much. So I'm still definitely taking Springer.
All right, let's just do the comp that I mentioned earlier then. Stanton or Judge?
Stanton.
Oh, I'll take Judge in that one. I'm not a Stanton guy. Always hurt. He's going to find a way to get hurt. And it really comes down to both. I mean, these are two of the most powerful hitters in baseball right now. Easy to say. One of them only has to pop the ball up to get it out of his home park, while the other has to hit it a country mile, as they would say in my neck of the woods.
And I would say Stanton has more power than Judge at this point, for sure. I think Judge has a lot of power. However, I think the knock here is Stanton's health. I think if they're both going to be healthy, I personally think it's Stanton 100% of the time. I mean, he's an elite level hitter, and he's going to hit for average no matter what, because he always has. I'm not confident Judge does. Stanton to me is, if he's healthy, he's a top five overall pick. If Judge is healthy, he's a top three round pick for sure.
Okay. And say that the thing for me is, even a healthy Stanton falls in like that third round for me. So that's the difference in viewpoints there.
Yeah, I'm gonna side with Nate on this one. I'm not the biggest Stanton fan. His numbers are eerily similar to Mark Trumbo over the last, I think, three or so years. I think it's, you're paying too much for it. If you're talking like very similar skill sets here, I think I'm just gonna go with Judge just because of the youth and because of the history of poor health basically for Giancarlo Stanton. So it seems to be sort of the tipping point for us right there, which right now coming into the season on Yahoo, he was the number 41 overall selection. So we're talking about, we're definitely buying in on the Judge here. So
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to dust off another old theory. I think we've discussed this one before, Doc, and it might be new to you, Van. If Stanton would change his name back to Mike, I would probably take him over Aaron Judge, because Mike Stanton, if memory serves, he just didn't get hurt that often. Giancarlo Stanton, whether it's him injuring himself, Mike Fiers hitting him in the face, it's I mean, that's my theory. It's probably a bad one, but, you know.
No, I like it. I'm on board. I like the baseball conspiracy theories. In fact, I generally like to refer to Giancarlo Stanton as Giancarlo, don't call me Mike Stanton.
There we go. Oh, man, I'm just thinking in my head of, like, actually pulling the trigger on in a dynasty league, like Judge for Stanton. I still don't know if I could pull the trigger on that, just because it's like it's been a month of this. I think if we're talking dynasty, I might still hang on to Stanton, but single season.
I'm telling you, a lot of it for me is that Yankee Stadium, man. It just, God, I mean, balls just fly out of that place.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So our second super duper hot starting guy, it's the Beardy Eric Thames. So let's see. We're on to you, Nate. What do you think? Should we do just another name game with Eric Thames? I mean, what do you think about what he's done so far?
Well, you know, I call him the River. I mean, because it's Thames. It'll be Thames to me. Look, I mean, that
like Marcus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, every Brit pronounces that Thames. I don't know where they find it. It doesn't fit my English vernacular. You know, that's obviously Thames. But anyway, I mean, names aside, I liked him coming over. I mean, the guy overseas hitting all kinds of home runs the last few years. I liked him back in 2011 and 12 when he was first coming up with Toronto. Got a, you know, cup of coffee as a Mariner. But I liked him back then, thought the power was legit then. He's hitting in a great park, and not just because it's named Miller Park. It actually helps home runs quite a bit. Is he making people forget about Prince Fielder? He certainly doesn't shake the ground the same way when he's running the bases, but, you know, vegetarians tend to weigh 300 pounds. So.
Yeah, it's a very conducive ballpark to left-handed power, too. Let's see, Judge or Thames, rest of the season?
This year I'm taking Thames.
They're right neck and neck for me. I'm a big proponent of position versatility. Does Thames, I only own him in one league. Does he have some, like, first base outfield, or is it just first base right now?
I wonder how that works with having not played in the majors for several years, because I know I'm on his baseball reference page, and he's listed as an outfielder.
Yes.
So I don't know. I'll look up the position.
Because I don't own him in enough places to quite know if that's right. Position versatility. But I think from a fantasy baseball standpoint, I would have to go with Thames, just because first base is – it's become quite a shallow position outside the top half dozen or so players. And Judge is an outfielder, and there's a lot of outfielders to be had. So Thames as a first baseman over Judge the outfielder.
Yeah, it looks like he's just first base. In Fangraphs, I know he's just first base, so I've got him at first base only.
Okay.
Yahoo, of course, has him at first base and outfield, because they're as liberal as it gets as far as position eligibility.
Right. I do want to point out that, again, 2 weeks ago when we were playing the original Legit Requit, I gave him a legit rating, and I'm still on board with that, too. He's really good. I think the big problem with him, and again, this is not really relevant in redraft leagues, but in a dynasty league, he's 30 years old, which is why I was more than happy to trade him for Kluber, who's about the same age. But if he were doing this as a 24-year-old like Judge is, then maybe we would – like, okay, if Aaron Judge were Eric Thames right now, doing the exact same season he has, I would be even higher than I am on Judge right now. If that makes sense. So, but the fact that Thames is 30, I'm not that enamored with him. I like him, and I think he'll have a good couple of years here, but this is not a guy to invest too heavily in just because of the age.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Thames as well here. Partial tiebreaker goes to the speed potential. He's just 0-for-1 so far, but that's because, you know, he's been hitting it out of the park every time he steps up to the plate. So he hasn't had a whole lot of stolen base opportunities. We know how much Milwaukee loves to steal, and I think that he could approach double digits come season's end. So we're going to sweep that here. Let's move on to Austin Hedges, who he last year at AAA, he sort of had his breakout season, but I was a bit dubious just because it's the Pacific Coast League, which is an extreme hitter's park. But he went on a little power binge recently. So legit or quit, Austin Hedges. What do you think, Nate?
Well, I would say that going back to February when I was initially putting together some positional rankings at BGFS, talking with my BG baseball co-host, John and Pimba, we were trying to collaborate on there. He talked me into trimming Hedges off of my top 15 catchers.
Nice.
That was terrible. But anyway, I mean, I was on him then as like maybe the 14th or 15th catcher because of that power he showed. And in San Diego, apparently the team philosophy is just swing as hard as you can in case you make contact. Because, I mean, you're looking at Ryan Schimpf. I don't even know.
That's correct.
Yeah, exactly. Hunter Renfro. I mean, these guys are just – unless your name's Will Myers – or maybe Marco, you're just swinging as hard as you can. Solarte, our pal Ron Rigney, you know, Solarte, he's been right about that one. That was a good call about a month ago. But anyway, San Diego, yeah, it's like just swing as hard as you can in case you make contact. And if you're in a deep league, catcher is an abyss. And Austin Hedges, I mean, 20 homers is not going to surprise me at this point.
Ben?
I'm all out. No, thank you. This is a quit for me. This is a kid who, in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League,
I've heard of it.
Inaugural draft, I took Austin Hedges as my number one overall prospect because I didn't take a prospect forever. And the only reason I did is because he was high on the top 100 prospects list. And the only reason he was high on the top 100 prospects list is because of his defense. He was not a kid that they thought was going to hit very much. And guess what? He has not hit very much. Yes, last year in the Pacific Coast League, he hit 326, 353, 597 with 21 homers. The homers are apparently legit. He has six of them this year. But guess what his triple slash line is in the majors this year? 193, 244, 446. He's Mike Zunino. Do you remember what happened to Mike Zunino last year, the year before? They sent him down because he can't hit. No, thank you. I have no interest in this. Clearly, the power is real, and he's going to hit for power. But I don't think he's ever really going to hit anything else. And I don't know. We're in a day and age where power is pretty easy to come by as compared to what it used to be. So I'll take a catcher who can at least hit the ball that doesn't involve hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, I own Hedges in one spot, and that is a two-catcher NL-only league. And I think that is where he belongs. Although I will say – Yeah. I mean, you have to own him in that scenario. But I think even in a 15-team two-catcher league, I would happily own him as my second catcher there, again, just because of the power. But, yeah, there's a ton of swing and miss in his profile right now. You're not going to get a good BABIP or batting average out of it. He's hitting a ton of fly balls. His hard contact is good, but I really don't think he's going to sustain a 20-plus percent home run per fly ball rate all season, especially playing half your games out there in San Diego. So, doesn't walk a lot either. That always turns me off. I prefer guys to walk a lot, like Tyler Flowers. Hey, how about that? He's dudes all over the place in this episode. But yeah, he's largely a quit for me unless you just are in one of those formats where you need to roster him. And in that case, you know you need to roster him and you don't need to listen to us talk about trimming hedges anymore. So let's move on to David Peralta. So Ben, we shall start with you here. Legit or quit on David Peralta?
I'm a big fan of David Peralta. He's in my legit column. I liked him last year a lot and had a couple of shares of him. And of course, he got hurt, so that didn't quite work out. But this year, he's pretty much doing what I expected him to do. He's hitting for an okay average. He's getting on base a lot, and he's got power. He has the three homers so far. He has three stolen bases to one caught stealing, which is a bit of a surprise. But you know, if he can extrapolate that out and steal 10 bases this year somehow, that's excellent. I'm not going to count on it, but I like it. So far, his career line is 295, 345, 484, which is pretty much in line with what he's doing this year. So I like him a lot. I'm a big buy, and he's fairly young. He's 29, so he's not too old.
All right, Nate, what are your thoughts?
Well, with Mr. Spitballer Joel Peralta out of the league, this is the only Peralta I care about anymore. I mean, no Willie or Jay Honey or however
Jahani, you
pronounce that name, that an H does not belong there, I would say that. David Peralta, I'm with Van. This is a guy I heavily invested in going into last season just because of that 2015 breakout he had. When you're looking at an 893 OPS, 17 homers, 9 steals. Chase Field, anytime I can get a bat that can make contact, playing half their games in Chase Field, that's a great hitter's venue. I love the Diamondbacks lineup for that reason. And yeah, Peralta, I'm all in.
Nice. Yeah, this is going to be a sweep. He's legit for me. I also was suckered in on him last year and then got nothing out of him. So far this year, doing, yeah, like we said, basically what I thought he was going to do last year. not going to get quite as much power, unfortunately, out of him as I was hoping for. He has a 54% ground ball rate right now. If you're not launching balls in the air, you're not going to be able to utilize his current 43% hard contact rate. And I don't like to look too much into that because at this point in the season, even the hard contact rate is a little bit more reactive than it is predictive. But he has been stinging the ball pretty hard, and that's led to his 380 BABIP. Obviously, that's going to come down, but it's going to be inflated if he keeps hitting the ball that hard. They're going to put a humidor in that stadium as well, so that's going to perhaps
really
sap him up a few extra home runs. Yeah, they are. I don't have a definite date in it, but so if you're looking at some, you know, maybe some Patrick Corbin action, some of the pitchers out there, I think they could be looking a lot better here in a month or two.
I think they should put it directly in the swimming pool.
Somebody has to run out there every inning and get some more balls out of the humidor. Yeah, it'd be great.
That's my thoughts on that idea.
I like it. So yeah, Peralta that sucks against lefties, so that kind of caps his value a little bit. But yeah, you're looking at a guy against righties at least. He's been hitting second in that lineup. That's going to be a ton of runs in RBI from a 300 hitter. So you got to buy into that. Legit or quit? Let's see. Van, we'll start with you again here. Yonder Alonso.
That's a big old quit for me. No, thank you. This is a guy whose last career high in home runs was in 2012. He had 549 at-bats, and he hit 9. So far this year, he has 5. Sure, why not? But this is a guy who's known for hitting for batting average and not much else. Maybe the power's up because power's up across the board, but no thanks. I think what you would do here is see if you can find somebody who believes in this and trade him right now, because I don't think this is going to continue at all.
Okay, what about you, Nate?
Well, he's got the 5 home runs through 24 games right now, so I'd set the over-under for the season at 8. I mean, you talk about 9 being his career. Right. Nah, I think he is coming into his own a little bit as a hitter. He's always been at decent discipline. The power's never really cranked up there. But AL only, I mean, a corner infield spot, maybe a first base spot if you got – as I said, if you're maybe in a – 12, 15 team league and AL only mixed leagues. I think Van's onto a good idea there with if you can find somebody that does believe in him, trade him away.
Well, we are going to have some disagreement on this one then because I am a believer. I'm going legit all the way on the Yonder Alonso. He worked on his swing a little bit in the off season and his approach as well. I think he figured out that what he had been doing in his career wasn't working, obviously, and I believe he's heading into free agency this offseason, and he basically changed his swing, his approach to hit for power and for less contact, and if you look into his statistics, it really bears that out in his batted ball profile. His contact rate has dropped dramatically by 8%, and his swing strike rate is up 3%, which is pretty indicative of a swing geared more towards power, and it's been working. We've seen he hit a 6 home run today. Obviously ISO just pretty much doubled what his career norm is, and he's still hitting for power. And so you see the strikeout rate climb, walk rate is still at 10%. Yeah. 24% strikeout rate, 10 points higher than where it's been, at his career. So it all adds up to me. I think that this is a fundamental shift in his approach and his swing, like I said. And so I'm bought in. I think that he's going to hit his way off of the A's, find himself a more favorable place to play. And I think that he's worthy of a corner infield spot in mixed leagues.
It's funny you should mention that. I was actually going to pop that question out to both of you. Does he end the season playing in Oakland? Because if he doesn't, and where he ends up with his next team, I would say, okay, well, I'm a big ballpark factors guy, obviously. If he ends up in the right place, I do think he makes enough contact that in a different lineup, in a different venue, that I would get a bit higher on him.
It also depends, too, if he's healthy. Over the last 4 years, he's only had one season. Well, he's had 2 seasons over 100 games, 1 season above 104 games. So if he's healthy, I mean, you can extrapolate some value out of that, but it's just not worth it to me. I think the price would be the big point, which is, I'm sure, one of Nathan's selling points here, is that he's not going to cost you anything, because for the most part, most people like me are skeptical, and I'm still skeptical, yeah. But you know, Nate isn't, so good for you. Hopefully it works out, but I just don't think it does, because he's a guy who pretty much hits with a wiffle ball bat. That's been his power level for his entire career, so I don't believe it one bit.
Well, Doc, and I'd have a question for you regarding him. Since you like him a little bit more than Van or I, how about a Yonder Alonso or maybe Brandon Belt in a dynasty league? Where would you go?
Oh, in a dynasty league, I'm still going Belt just because, I mean.
Belt's really good. And Yonder Alonso's not.
Yonder Alonso's 32, so like. Or 30 as well, I guess I should say. He's not 32, but yeah, so you're looking at, I'm not the world's biggest Belt fan. Van is. He is actually, he's got a certificate for that.
I do, yeah. That's above my computer. Yeah. I kiss it when I go to sleep every night. Yep.
So yeah, I'd still go Belt. I'm not going like super crazy for Yonder Alonso. I wouldn't have him ranked up there yet, but I really do like what I've seen from him so far. So I'm picking up. He's like 4% owned or something like that in Yahoo. So just go if you need. I mean, especially with the crazy amount of injuries that we've seen so far, if you need an injury replacement, he is out there. Unless you're in a really deep league, I guarantee he's still available. So I'm all about picking him up. But let's move on to Michael Conforto. Nate, we'll start with you here. Legit or quit on Conforto?
He's always a tough one for me, and he has been. I feel like everyone around me the last couple of years has just been bigger on him. Maybe it's a Mets hatred that I have as a Braves fan, because Mets and Phillies and Nationals, I really just hate them a lot. But
tell us how you really feel, though.
I don't mind the Marlins. Like, it's just kind of whatever. But those three teams, man. Anyway.
Well, it's harder to hate someone when they consistently suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got two World Series to my Braves one, so that's the hang-up for a lot of people around here. I mean, you got to love the numbers that Conforto's putting up now. You would think they would keep him in the lineup every day. I don't know. I mean, you got Cespedes waiting in the wings. I don't know. It's just hard to gauge where the Mets are going to go. Jay Bruce is definitely doing them some favors right now if they have plans to trade him. He didn't in the offseason, but right now I would say people might line up to get Jay Bruce in to bolster their lineups. If that happens, Conforto is big for me. Right now I'm deeper mixed and NL only.
All right. Van, what do you think?
We played a game of ADP Wars, I believe, in the offseason that was Michael Conforto and Manny Margot. And my thought process at the time was, I can't believe anybody's going to go Manny Margot because I didn't think he would have the job. Turns out he does have the job. So I kind of wavered on that and thought, all right, well, I'll go Margot. Well, it turns out Conforto was the right answer in that regard. Margot's been okay, but Conforto's been elite. He's been so good that even Terry Collins has to play him. That's how good Conforto is. I'm a big fan of him, too. I think he can hit really well. He's got a good – I hate this expression, but I'm going to use it. He's a good pure hitter, and he's shown that he has some power here. So I really like him. He's got a good swing. He's been hitting lefties okay this year, which is a big step for these left-handed hitters that are young. So I'm all in. I think he's legit. Since he's got the playing time, I'm all in for this season too. I liked him as a career, but I think this year we're going to get some value out of him because he will get the ability to play.
How about this? Like, what, both of you guys, I'd be interested to get your take here with Conforto, kind of what I was getting at. Come August 1st, so right after the July 31st trade deadline, who's going to be playing left, center, right field for the Mets?
Well, Cespedes obviously has a spot. I think Conforto does keep down that right field spot. From there, it's going to be interesting. Here's what I think. Ligaris, I think the Mets are going to be out of it. Ligaris could, but I think the Mets are going to be out of it, so I think they're going to trade whatever pieces they can. Now, you're not going to trade Conforto because he's cheap and young. Jay Bruce, yeah, I think he'll trade. They may even trade Ligaris to a team who's looking for, you know, at least some defense in that position because he's been on the team for a while. He's got to be getting up there in arbitration. So that's an interesting question just simply because I don't know what the team construction is going to look like at that time.
Sure.
Yeah, I would think that by the end of the season, Conforto's got himself a full-time gig. Because I see Jay Bruce moving on, especially if he keeps up these numbers. There's definitely going to be a buyer for him out there somewhere. So, yeah, it's just all about the playing time. He's always been able to hit, Conforto has. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens when Cespedes returns. But in all leagues right now, I'm hanging on and I'm playing him. You know, if you've got a spot for him.
Yeah.
He's making it worthwhile.
And I think Granderson's, you know, totally washed now. So.
Yeah, he looks pretty much toast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't even think he'd be too hurt if they sort of, you know, diminished his role a little bit and sat him a few more games, made him a pitch runner a little bit more.
Sure.
All right. One last guy here on Legit or Quit. We had a lot of discussion on this, a lot of back and forth between Van and myself on Kevin Gausman versus teammate Dylan Bundy and some other guys like Vince Velasquez. But we're going to focus on Kevin Gausman, who was – inappropriately ejected tonight. Unfortunately,
that was a joke.
In the second inning. Oh boy. So without getting into that too much, Van, since we've had so much back and forth, let's just start with you. Kevin Gausman, legit or quit?
I'm still legit. He's 26. His velocity's good. Early in the season, there were reports that he's tinkering with his pitch selection, and he still kind of is. So clearly he's working through a few things. I think once he gets settled down, he's going to settle down. And to be honest, I think if at the end of the season we look back and go, wow, you know, since May 4th, Kevin Gausman was 10-1 with a 2.2 ERA, that's not going to surprise anybody because he's got really good talent. And a lot of people thought he was going to take that step forward this year. Maybe it doesn't happen that quickly, but I'm still in. I think he's really good, and I'm hanging on to him in any league that I have him in.
All righty. Nate, what's your take on the Gauss?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with Van there. I think he's a buy low guy right now in most leagues. I'm not willing to bail on him in a bad month, although that walk rate is alarming, especially when you're looking at a guy that the last two seasons, a 2.3 walks per nine, 2.4 walks per nine in 2016, 5.1 this season. That's not good. And the home runs are coming after them. I mean, Camden Yards is a place it's hard to keep the ball in the yard anyway, but with Gausman, we've seen the ability. We've seen him progress last season. I'm buying in. He's going to get it figured out, mechanics, whatever it is, the mental lapse maybe he's having. Maybe Dylan Bundy can rub off on him a little bit. But, yeah, if you can buy this guy low in your league, I would do it.
Yeah, it's not that I'm, like, terribly low or I think he'll be worthless or anything like that. I just I hope that he goes back to using the splitter a lot more. That slider was just not good. He wasn't getting whiffs on it. And I think if he goes back to a splitter-heavy approach, he'll have a lot more success. Like you said, I think the walk rate will come down as well. That's really anomalous. But I think he'll be a number three, number four. God, I can't even remember right now. I think that we were talking about him versus like Dylan Bundy. And boy, did that like window of excitement close quickly for me, because Bundy is just like he's just dropping velocity with each start. And strikeout rate is going down as well. I'm already scared off of him. So between those two, I'd actually go Gausman just based on health. And I think I'd probably stick with him over Velasquez too. Man, Velasquez is just another guy. Just can't seem to put it together. Can't find the plate. Reminds me a lot of Daniel Norris and a lot of guys on the preseason like that sort of have yet to, they just refuse to put it together for me. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the legit or quit. Blah, 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 blah. Easy for me to say. Let's move on to the bullpen report. And we're going to kind of skim over this a little bit at the risk of this turning into a marathon podcast. Let's go Anaheim. It's your Angels, Ben. We'll start with you here. How are we valuing Bud Norris until Cam Bedrosian returns? He's been good.
He has been good. And, you know, I kind of mentioned this earlier. There's a lot of guys who struggle in the rotation, move to the bullpen. They can throw a little harder. They don't have to rely on secondary offerings, and they're really good. He's been really good. I don't necessarily think he's this good, but I think he's perfectly fine until Bedrosian returns. It's Bedrosian's job. I firmly believe that for the rest of the year. The only reason Bedrosian won't pitch in the ninth inning is if he's hurt. And right now he is hurt. Actually, I don't think he's even picked up a ball yet, so it may be another week or two. However, when he comes back, I think it's pretty safe to drop Bud Norris.
Five saves in just like a week or just really rolling in him. And I know that because I picked him up in my league. So I'm quite happy with my Bud Norris investment. But Nate, what do you think when Cambridge's healthy and he returns, is it going to be him closing games again? Or are they going to stick with Bud Norris?
No, they got to go to Cam Bedrosian. I'm with Van on this one. This is the guy for the future for them. I mean, he's sick. When he's healthy, I mean, the guy has sick stuff. He strikes out the world. And Bud Norris just makes me feel like I'm living in some kind of bizarro world right now.
So. Yeah. Felt the same way. God, who was it in the Reds bullpen last year? There's just a crappy starter who was almost the closer. I can't even think of his
Cingrani.
Name.
Right, Cingrani, yeah.
No, somebody old. It was even worse than Singer.
Well, then it had to be LaTroy Hawkins, right? I mean, because
old is correct with LaTroy Hawkins.
The Twins fan, Dawkins, he'll appreciate that.
Yeah.
Oh, Hawkins, yeah, he's been busy up in the booth. They're really bringing him around as far as getting him with players. God dang it. He was like, oh, Ross Ohlendorf. That's who it is.
Oh, yeah.
That saves last year. That's who Bud Norris feels like. But
oh, well.
Yeah, no, I'm actually not 100. I'm not as sure as you guys that Bedrosian will necessarily close games when he comes back. And, you know, Van, I'm sure you know Sosa's tendencies more than I would. But it just seems like coming into the season, they're looking for any excuse to not have Cam Bedrosian close. I don't know if it's because of his injury history or just like even when Houston Street went down, they're like, oh, we're going to go by committee. And then it seems like Bedrosian is always getting sort of the short shrift there. So I'm definitely until I see Bedrosian lock down another save, I'm going to hang on to Bud Norris. But let's move over to Philly. Hector Neris has been a little bumpy. Does he keep the job the rest of the season, Nate?
I've been on this guy for a couple of years now. Because he's the best relief pitcher on that team, and it should have been his job from the beginning of the season. But we all, have to love G-Mar Gomez for some reason.
I don't know why they ever had that idea. Oh boy, I don't even know. Do we know any handcuffs that would be worthwhile? Is it worthwhile to stash anybody else in that bullpen?
Well, I mean, it'd be Joaquin Benoit, right? I mean, he's been the much better pitcher out of the bullpen. Neris strikes guys out, but doesn't really do anything else well. I think I'm going Benoit on this one. Benoit has had a better season. His last year was far better. And I'm just not a big Neris fan. I mean, the short answer is that who knows, because it's the Phillies. But I think if you have one of these guys, maybe try and get the other one, so that way you just have the handcuff regardless. And this is one of those pure handcuff situations where you just have the guy. So that's kind of what I would look at. I think, honestly, Benoit gets the job eventually again and runs with it. And in fact, they said he should have had the save op today, I think, but something came up, so he didn't even pitch for it.
I'll tell you who I'd like to see as a closer in Philly that would interest me, Vince Velasquez, because the dude clearly can't start games.
That's true. Fair enough.
Yeah. I think they've got to try and ride him out for the rest of the season, just to sort of make or break at this point.
Yeah. Well, you want to try and make him a starter because that's where the value lies. Then if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, he's not been horrible. It's just with his stuff, and it's inconsistent. He walks so many people. I mean, he's got one of those, like, fringe, big-time prospect starters that could just become a dominant closer.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm higher than as far as Neris. I'm closer to an 8 as far as – I really like the strikeout minus walk ratio. And he's just basically given up too many home runs so far. And when you're a reliever, you give up too many home runs, that's going to really inflate your ERA in a hurry. It takes a while to get it back down. But moving forward, look at his xFIP is 381. While that's not great for a reliever, I think that's going to be a little bit closer to where he's going to pitch moving forward. So, yeah, Owen, as far as a handcuff, I am not particularly excited to own Joaquin Benoit as a handcuff. There's a little bit more interesting options. Fernando Rodney has been predictably terrible. So let's see who we're on here. I think it's you, Van. Who are you looking at?
Well, apparently it's Archie Bradley, which kind of saddens me because I always did like him as a pitcher. And to be honest, I think Arizona eventually wants him to be a starter, but he has been absolutely lights out of the bullpen. And as bad as the bullpen has been, I think that's a pretty easy way to fix it. And there's no other guys really on that team who you can kind of point to. JJ Hoover, but every time he ever had a closer's job, he was just abysmal. So I don't have any confidence in him. I think eventually, if Rodney continues to struggle, somehow Bradley wanders into a save and then it becomes a normal thing. So I'm looking pretty hard at Archie Bradley.
All right, Nate, what do you think?
You know, I like the idea of handcuffing Fernando Rodney with 2012 Fernando Rodney. That would be that would be the way I'd like to go. You know, he of the 0.6 ERA, but I don't think that's possible. I'm just guessing there. But anyway, I mean, Tom Wilhelmson is a guy that just seems like he's going to – I mean, he was a decent closer a few years back in Seattle. Something's just hitting me that, like, he's going to get a few opportunities at some point. I really don't think he deserves it. I don't think he's good. But, I mean, hell, they gave Fernando Rodney a closer gig, so why not? Archie Bradley, yeah. I mean, maybe if he's a closer the rest of this season, but we know that always becomes problematic if they plan to make him a starter in the future after being a closer. He's been fantastic out of the bullpen. You bring up a good point, Van, with J.J. Hoover. He seems to pitch well in middle relief, maybe a setup role, but not in the closer role. It's a mess out there in their bullpen, and I think that the Diamondbacks are going to make a trade. So I would say the closer of the future there in Arizona may not even be on the team yet.
Interesting. We're all over the place in this bullpen there. We're going to name everybody in the bullpen because I think they might transition Archie Bradley back to the rotation with the loss of Shelby Miller. They might be thinking about that in the future. And there's a couple other interesting guys that I think could take over as the closer. J.J. Hoover being one of them. You look at his strikeout numbers this year, 13.5 K per nine, and that's stemming from a much increased use of his slider, over 40, almost 44% slider use right now, just behind his fastball right now. And that has really, really induced a lot more strikeouts and a lot more ground balls as well. 40% ground ball rate would be about a career high for him. And 169 corresponding ERA with that. And then the other guy, I'm trying to decide between these two guys. The other guy is a lefty, Jorge De La Rosa, former starter, or as recently as last year. But striking out over 10 guys per nine now, and his walks have been a lot limited since moving to the pen. 231 ERA so far, 50% ground ball rate. I think I would prefer him just based off of his skill set. If he weren't a lefty, you know, they like to usually keep their lefties for matchups, and they only have one other guy in that bullpen as far as the lefty goes. So I don't necessarily know. I think just based on that, I have rostered J.J. Hoover as the handcuff, but we'll see. For me, it's between one of those guys, but it's going to be one to watch because we are all over the place on that
any
one.
Any of those eight guys. Let's move sure.
to all of those guys as far as handcuff. I hope you have Bud deep, Norse. Deep benches.
Bud Norse. That's what it's going to be.
There you go.
Yeah, he's going to get traded. Oh, boy. Speaking of trades, in the bullpen, Nationals are eyeing Kelvin Herrera from the Royals. So does anybody else have any suggestions as far as who closes when he's gone besides Joaquin Soria?
Joaquin no. Soria. Yeah.
That answers that. So, okay, how about any confidence in Joaquin Soria as an actual closer?
He'll be fine. Look, they're going to be out of it because they're not a very good team. And it's a fun story. He used to be their closer back when he was known as the Mexicutioner. He'll be fine. He'll be perfectly suitable for it.
Very good. All right, let's move on to our prospect talk for the week before we get to our screaming and screaming. Oh boy, streaming and move on. Wait for it. All that bullpen talk has made me want to scream. Ron Rigney, obviously not with us this week, but he does prospect on deck circle, if you will, over at Big Eye Fantasy Sports. And this week he wrote up Jose Barrios and Lewis Brinson, who are both very fine handcuffs as far as I'm concerned. Jose Barrios, it was speculated that this Saturday it might be his, I think it was the first time that the Twins have actually needed a fifth starter, so speculated that he would finally be getting the call because he has just decimated AAA pitching, or hitting, I guess I should say. But apparently that will not be the case. They're going to go with the wily veteran Nick Tepish.
Oh boy.
Gross.
Somebody pat me on the back and tell me it'll be okay.
It'll be fine. Barrios is going to be really good. Just wait.
Thank you.
It will not be fine with Tepish.
No.
No, I'm not watching that game. There's no way in hell I'm watching that game. I will say for Barrios, I follow you know, some of their beat reporters, some of the guys in the organization, and Parker Hageman's a good follow. He tweets about them a lot, and he was profiling Jose Barrios. The difference in his changeup grip in the minor leagues compared to last year, you know, there was some rumblings about him tipping his pitches, and if you looked, basically he put side-by-side screenshots between this year and last year of his changeup grip, and you can see visibly he was holding it farther back than his fastball when he threw that. And so that's a bit of a tip right there. And this year he seems to have straightened that out a little bit more. And obviously the results are terrific so far in AAA. So I am definitely stashing the Barrios wherever I can. And I have this past week, especially because I thought that Saturday he would be pitching. Unfortunately, he's not going to be pitching on Saturday. So Lewis Brinson, though, moving on to another guy that I am stashing in at least one league, I believe, is the BGFS Dynasty Classic is the only league that I have him in. I guess between which one are you guys more interested in between Brinson and Barrios? Brinson, obviously, a little bit power, a little bit of speed. I guess Nate, let's start with you here. What do you think about the ETAs between these guys, and which one are you stashing first?
I would say it comes down to, you know, complete team need if you're looking at this season. Dynasties, I like both these guys. I think they have bright futures ahead of them. We've seen Barrios a little bit, and yeah, an 802 ERA is not inspiring anybody to go to the waiver wire right now. But being a pitcher and I like target field, I would lean toward the Barrios side of this.
I'm going to take – here's what I'll say
about these guys.
I think Berrios comes up sooner because he's also been in the majors before, so they're going to be a little quicker to pull the trigger. I think Brinson is more exciting only because he's the offensive player as opposed to the pitcher, and I ultimately find offensive players a little more exciting. He's five-tool, basically. He's going to be really good, but I don't think he comes up till much later in the season. Berrios could be up. Well, I mean, there was talk of him being up this week, so he may be up within 2 weeks. Who knows? So I think Berrios comes up and probably gives you more value this season just due to volume. But I do like Brinson as an overall really, really good player.
Yeah, I agree on all counts. I think Brinson has some really nice upside. I fear that he's going to struggle. You know, like I said, the plate discipline is not great. Strikes out a lot, doesn't walk a lot. So I think when he first gets called up, he might have a bit of a bumpy ride if he doesn't hit for power right away and if he's not getting on base to steal bags. At least Milwaukee is a good place to hit, I guess. And they have a pretty good offense. So it might not be too long before they pull a plug on the Keon Broxton experiment and you see Lewis Brinson called up. I wanted to throw two more deep league prospects out there. I might make a habit of doing this every week, just sort of piggybacking, because Ron covers guys that are close to the majors and, you know, basically handcuffs. And boy, there's a lot of fish in the sea as far as the prospects go. So maybe each week I can throw out a couple deeper league guys that have caught my eye basically over the past week. And the first one, guy's been getting some run over on Fangraphs because of a really hot start. It's John Duplantier over with the Diamondbacks. 22-year-old drafted last year in the third round. He fell because of basically extensive injuries, shoulder, elbow, hamstring, you name it, he had it. And so because of the injury woes, he fell on the draft of the third round. But this year he started off, I believe he had 21 and two-thirds innings without allowing a run to open up the season. Basically, he's got really good velocity. He can touch 97, and his command appears to have taken a bit of a step up so far this year. He's got an above-average curveball as well. It sits in the low 80s. So the changeup needs work, as we always see with these young guys. But I think that he could be a pretty fast riser. So he's definitely on my list of guys that are rising in the minors. And then the other one, Van, you'll appreciate this, Vlad Guerrero Jr. Mm-hmm. My God, this guy is going crazy. I've traded for him in every league that I possibly can, except for Dynasty. I have yet to do that. I have a hard time pulling off trades of that league for some reason. But, man, this guy, he's walking more than he's striking out so far this year. He's just 18, so he could still be 2 to 3 years away from actually getting a call-up. But 14 walks, 12 strikes as of tonight, 333. 449, 542, triple slash, plays third base right now. Probably moved over to first base when he gets older and fills out, sort of pretty standard, I guess, for bigger guys like that. But just elite bat speed, 30-plus home run potential, and I think tremendous batting average OBP potential too. So I drafted him in the BGFS Dynasty Classic. Can't wait for him to eventually get called up. If you're in a shallower league, he's definitely a guy that I would be picking up along with Duplantier.
Sounds like I need to get another cat.
There you go, Vlad Jr.
No, I like him. He's got really, really good potential and obviously has good genetics as far as that goes. Hopefully he has that thing that his dad had, which is one leg that's significantly longer than the other. So he just runs really awkwardly, because that's one of the best parts about Vlad.
Well, I'll have to get the scouting report on that. We'll get out there and measure his legs. Somebody get his inseams. But, all right, let's look into some streaming pitches, boys, and then we'll get out of here. Nate, we'll start with you. We got a couple of streaming options for the people.
I would say R.A. Dickey, being a Braves fan. I'm looking at it. I mean,
what a homer.
Yeah, what a homer. And I'm not real encouraged by, I mean, there's not much to see here. It's just blah, kind of. But if you're in a deeper league and you're looking for a streamer this weekend, R.A. Dickey is pitching quite well. He hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs in any start this season. That might surprise some people out there. A knuckleball is doing his job, and as long as Kurt Suzuki, the Braves' backup catcher, can keep it in front of him, I think R.A. Dickey might be a good place to go look. We mentioned a few earlier on the low-owned pitchers. Jordan Montgomery has a start this weekend, as well as Jesse Hahn, who Van mentioned. If you can grab those guys, if they're available.
Actually, Van, what about you?
I've got a couple names. I'll throw up there quickly for you. They're not pretty, but they'll do. First off, Matt Garza is playing on Friday against a really bad Pittsburgh team right now. Yeah, I know. But Milwaukee scores runs, and that's pretty much going to put them in line for a win right off the bat just because of how bad the Pirates are. His teammate, Wily Peralta. It's Willie, but it's one L, so I call him Wily. he pitches on Sunday against those same bad Pirates. He has some potential. He's kind of grown a little bit this year. He's striking guys out at an okay rate. Again, Pirates are bad. And then I also had Dickey on my list, too. He faces the Cardinals Sunday, who've been really bad. And he's been pretty solid. So any of those three guys can get you some decent starts, I believe, and help you take the week.
Either of you guys actually wear a Dickey ever?
Can't say I have. I'm not saying I won't, but I can't say I have.
I was born in 1985, so I think 78 was a little bit before my time.
1778, yes.
Very well. All right. My guys, I've got Daniel Norris because I just can't get enough Daniel Norris in my life. He is at Oakland on Saturday. Just about as good a matchup as you can get right there. Chris Tillman Sunday against the White Sox. He's coming off the DL, so look out for him. He might be a solid pickup in most leagues, to be honest. He's sort of blah, you know, but innings filler. And also his following start is in Kansas City, so that is always a plus, as bad as the Royals have been so far. And speaking of the Royals being terrible, Mike Clevinger will pitch against them on Sunday, and he is – I actually don't really like Mike Clevinger, so this is sort of like a really deep league stream, but I'm basically willing to throw anybody out against the Royals right now and hope for a quality start. And then if you're really feeling fruity, one more guy, Clayton Richard against the Dodgers at home on Saturday.
I couldn't do it.
Lefty against the Dodgers.
I thought maybe, but then I realized it was Clayton Richard, and I thought, nah, I'm not gonna put those words out of my mouth. No thing.
What do you guys think of a Tyler Glass? Now was kind of solid. I mean, it was a positive result for him on Tuesday night. What would you guys say about him in Pittsburgh against the Brewers?
Well, not against the Brewers, but I think he could. I think if he rattles off two or three pretty good starts in a row, he might be able to be on a roll.
I would say overall, it's kind of a weak streamer weekend. It's if you're in that, but I don't envy that position. Let's put it that way.
Sure,
absolutely. All right, guys, we're gonna get the heck out of here. Be sure to follow Nate's work over at Fantasy Alarm and Sporting News, as well as Big Eye Fantasy Sports. And you can find Van at boo2inc.com, and of course, listen to the Backup Catcher podcast. Oh, I listen to the BG Baseball podcast, and the Consistency Cast is back as well. I listened to that with you and Bob Lung. You talked about the draft. That's are you doing that? You're doing that weekly again, right, Nate?
Oh, yes. This weekend we will actually have Jason Braddock, Sports Talk 790 in Houston, on to really get into some of the NFL draft happenings.
Very, very nice. All right, Van, it was good to talk to you again. It's good to get everybody together for the first time.
Excellent.
Yeah, let's try to keep this thing going.
Until next week. Right?
We'll try to go two for two next week. So until then, may the fantasy guys find a fun.